Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another weekly podcast by The Paranormal Guide. As always, joined by the tech guy, Paul Tippich.
How you going, everyone?
The roving reporter, Debbie Williams.
How you going, everybody?
And the team's psychic mystic medium. That was a really poor introduction for Tash, but Tash McDonald.
Hi, how are you going?
And I'm Ashley Hall. Today we're talking all about, well, this is our first UFO show on the new podcast. We haven't talked about UFOs yet, and it is quite a show, really. This is a massive event that took place in 1966 in Westall, Victoria. So a lot of you may have seen on the Sci-Fi Channel on ABC a documentary titled Westall 66, done by Rosie Jones. And, well, rather than me talking about it and blabbering about it for the next 10 minutes, we'll let the guys talk about it. They watched it fairly recently. So what was this event?
Generally, it was a mass sighting in a schoolyard. A lot of teachers and students witnessed it, and the students were told not to talk about it, and all evidence was or is missing.
That's right. 190 students, I believe, and one teacher saw the UFOs. Some saying it was only one UFO, some saying it was a couple. They landed in the
The Grange.
The Grange, that's right. Just behind the school. There was a couple of farm paddocks there. A few of the local residents saw it. There was sightings days prior to it as well. So it was a huge lead up to this massive Australian UFO sighting.
They actually said that there was some physical evidence along the ground as well. The grass looked like it had been scalded. It wasn't burnt. It wasn't singed. It looked like it was affected by heat in some way.
That's right, like a little mini crop circle.
What it all comes down to an end, so yes, in the morning, about 10 a.m. on April, I'm looking at my board here, April 6, 1966, two state schools in Westall, Victoria, Westall State Primary School and Westall High School, they were just having their recess, either just going out to it or just ending recess, when all of a sudden an object, or some people say two objects, were seen above, well, in the air, about 50 feet, I reckon they said, approximately.
Just over the tree lines, I believe.
Just over this tree line, and 200 students and a teacher, or a couple of teachers, depending on who you listen to, saw this event take place. And as this confusion was happening, some of the kids ran screaming from the objects, whereas a couple moved towards it, and that in itself is quite an interesting tale. But we'll get to that shortly. Is there anything that you guys want to talk about the event? So I guess we'll talk about some of the things that led up to the event. So Paul knows a little more, it would seem, about this. What took place before the actual school instance happened?
Oh, yeah. There was a resident in the local area who saw an object one night flying across the sky. I think it was traveling east-west. And the next night he was preparing for it, and he set up his camera and he was taking long exposures of the area, and he captured the UFO flying past, which in the documentary they do examine. There was another gentleman who was driving home from somewhere, and he was heading down the road very near to where this all happened, and his lights were like magnetically pulled towards where he saw a UFO, or wasn't a flying object, was a landed object. I'm not sure if there's a different term for that. But, yeah, his lights were pulled to it, and he almost hit a tree. He just swerved off and just missed this tree, which 2 days earlier to that, someone actually hit the tree from sighting the UFO again 2 days earlier to that, and it caused his death, I believe, as well.
I think there was some story about some official involvement as well, that our Air Force or some people, pilots who were flying an aircraft, obviously they wouldn't be flying a boat, would they? Might have actually sighted it or even followed the craft. Did anyone remember that little bit?
Yes, that's something we'll talk about afterwards with the military involvement with it. There is some things to point out that they were kind of forewarned or had foreknowledge of this event as they were on the scene so quickly. But these light things, let's talk about that quickly. So this guy is driving along, and are you saying the lights in kind of the holder in the car were bent, or was the light beam itself bent?
No, the actual beam of light itself was attracted to the object. So they're saying where your lights normally head straight down the road, as it was passing the car by, you know, 10, 15, 20 metres or whatever, they started curving off towards the object. So the actual light was attracted to the car, not the actual globes, but the light, the beam of light was twisting away.
That's really strange. I didn't actually watch the full thing, so hearing that, that's really weird.
Debbie, hearing that, can you think of anything that could cause such a thing to happen, like light itself to be bent?
Refraction. Potentially, maybe there was something... if there was a craft, or if there was some way of this ship, creature, whatever it was, refracting the light, being able to bend the light in some way. So what if the craft were right in front of the car and reflected the light some way?
The gentleman who saw this object described it as being conical. So it was more like an ice cream cone planted in the ground. And he did say it was really bright itself. So it was as if he was leading to believe that the object was powered by light rather than sunlight. It was powered by some sort of energy of light, which, I don't know, might explain the light bending towards it.
Or why it was seen predominantly in the daytime as well.
At the time. So this event took place at night. Yep. But so Tasha's saying, so it's kind of corresponding to what you're saying. So if it's that bright, it was obviously that bright that was so obviously seen in the school, at the school in the daylight. And, you know, we're going to be delving into some interesting stuff like military hardware and stuff like that. Was this UFO like some sort of military experiment that's gone a bit haywire? You know, not meant to be seen, but for some reason it was. So I guess after this event happened, the next morning, this was seen. The object was seen above the school. Is that pretty much what happened?
No, this was a couple of days after again.
So a whole bunch of students and teachers have seen this object. Now, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Debbie once again went hit her feet in the street. And this is kind of interesting, as Debbie went out, rather than asking a question, she showed a picture, a picture of, I guess, what the students or one of the adults had drawn from their memory of the incident. We're going to see what the public thought of that. So that'll take us nicely into what the students saw that day. So we'll take a quick break when we come back. Feet on the street.
Are you part of a paranormal investigation group? Want to find out more about any workshops, courses and events in your area? Are you searching for a paranormal group to join? Or are you after the latest paranormal equipment being sold here in Australia? Then log on to Access Paranormal, where you can find a list of paranormal groups around the country, available jobs, where to buy paranormal equipment and recommended reading. The website is accessparanormal.com. Australia's chosen paranormal networking website.
At Alpine Nirvana, we are Australia's online suppliers of quality occult products. We have a wide selection of products for spiritual enhancement, protection, cleansing, and divination. Items include smudge sticks, incense, herbs, crystals, books, and coming soon, hoodoo curios. Alpine Nirvana, helping to bridge the gap between the spiritual and the paranormal. www.alpinenirvana.com.au or follow us on Facebook.
Welcome back, everybody. We're jumping straight into Feet on the Street with Debbie. So, Debbie, give us a quick rundown on what you did before we give this a bit of a play.
I had a fantastic little printout of the drawing that the children who had witnessed the incident had drawn, and I pretty much showed it to people, and I just kind of said, "What if you look at this picture, what does it represent to you, or what do you think it is?"
Okay, guys, we'll give that a quick listen.
Just by looking at that picture, what do you reckon it is?
Well, it looks like two UFOs and children, I guess, or people, adults, looking at the UFOs, hovering slightly above a grass field in country. The stuff at the back indicates country. Looks like daytime.
Well, it looks like UFOs, whether they're landing or taking off, but yeah, that's what it looks like. And the people look like they're startled and they're... Yeah, unsure what to think, yeah.
I think it looks like some UFOs landing and some people welcoming them and to Earth by the looks. That's what it looks like to me.
Couple of people encountering UFOs on a like cornfield.
Objects coming down from the ground being guided by humans.
I definitely think there's something UFO related to this picture, whether it be a landing, I'm not sure.
Contact.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Yeah. So this
plain
is
and simple contact.
The children just sort of trying to represent what happened.
Yeah. Extraterrestrials and humans.
I think these children are looking at something. They have no idea what it is, but they're intrigued and they just want to go out and, yeah, they have no idea what's going on, so I don't think they'd even know what a UFO was if they were children.
Yeah, just contact.
So that was Feet on the Street. So obviously these people saw this picture, and most of them had a pretty good idea. The picture really was of stereotypical saucer-like craft, and we'll chuck that picture up with a link with the podcast description so you can have a look for yourself. So some of those comments were really quite interesting. Most people just accept, yep, it was people meeting UFO out in the field somewhere.
One of the comments which I thought was interesting by one of the guys there was, if they were children, they probably wouldn't know what a UFO was. So I thought that was a really interesting comment, because maybe they'd be more accepting. And because they've got open minds, etc., they would remember it because they believe magical stories. And not that it's a magical story, but do you know what I mean? They'd be more open to seeing it. And who knows, that drawing is probably, if it existed at all, pretty accurate to what they saw maybe.
Well, that is a lot of what we talk about with the paranormal, is that children kind of have a more open mind to this. But when we're talking about children and, you know, we've got an interview we'll play a little bit later. Rosie actually talks about that the reason why this Westall case didn't come to light is because it was mostly the realm of children that was seeing it. And if an investigation took place, the children just don't have any integrity themselves, so.
Yeah, but not just that how many children saw it? It wasn't just like one or two children. It was like hundreds or so children. So wouldn't that give them some integrity?
Yeah, the problem here is this was happened in the mid-60s, which children didn't really have any voice at all. Yeah. We're in the 21st century now, and the voice of children is just huge. We put a lot of effort into children. A lot of the laws and everything's based a lot more around children now than what it was before, and they've got a lot more integrity now. So, I mean, if something like this happened right now, their story would be heard everywhere, as where before it was just hidden under the carpet. So,
1966, 1967, there was a lot of Cold War sort of espionage stuff. Harold Holt was the Prime Minister. LBJ was visiting Australia. So there was a lot of stuff going on about...
The space race was going crazy. Exactly. The Russians, the Americans were competing to get on the moon.
Actually, that's a really important point, because they're talking a lot of the news. A lot of Paul's like, you know, air fisting at the moment. A lot of these newspapers didn't cover the event. You know, it didn't appear in a lot of these newspapers. Two newspapers cover this and one TV thing. And if everyone's imagination is set to the sky with the you know, the space race, and I guess it wasn't so important with us. If this happened in America, it would have blown up. Like, wow, the Russians not only in space, but they're, you know, hovering over our cities. Why isn't this being covered?
Oh, what I don't understand is, why wouldn't they want us to know that it's there? Why? What's the reason why they've hidden this? Why?
That's, I believe, a very easy question to answer, and it's basically economics. If we believe, as Earthlings, we are the most supreme being on this planet, we believe we're very self-indulgent. We rape this and pillage this planet pretty badly, to tell you the truth. If we believe there is something out there that can take us over, or is more powerful than what we are, which obviously it would be if it was coming to visit us, our governments would fall.
Basically, it's just a control thing.
Exactly right. It's being a control thing. It's to keep us moving like ants, basically. So if we stop, the world stops, and you can't have that. It'd be chaos.
Don't forget, in this era, 1966, 1967, the children had no precedent. There really weren't a lot of stories about outer space and that sort of thing. I guess my point was, the children had no precedent to make up this story. It's not something that they would have seen before in a book or something like that.
That's also assuming that this was alien aircraft. Yeah, there's a lot of other reasons why it would have been hushed up if it was just an experimental thing they didn't want out at the time. That's just another thing they could just want it quietened up. But that's something that we'll leave till after. A question I'll pose to you guys is if an aircraft that was unusual, a UFO, so to speak, was seen over a high school here today now, what do you think would happen?
It'd be all over Facebook and everybody would know about it. With the media nowadays and social media more than anything, everything's more open. It's an open forum for everything.
It probably also hit one of the 700 Qantas flights going in and out of Adelaide. And our airspace now is a lot fuller than what it was in the 60s. There's a lot more planes. There's a lot more monitoring. Everyone's got a mobile phone. Everyone's got a camera, video camera, GPS trackers. There's all sorts of stuff there, you know. So there was only one camera in the Westall 66 school at the time, one of the teachers, and she did take photos, and it was confiscated. Could you imagine confiscating 600 students' cameras these days? You're just not going to get it, you know. There's no way it's going to happen. People would run home. If I saw a UFO and I touched it or whatever, I'd run home and go tell everyone. I wouldn't go back to school, that's for sure.
Most people in their own home have a computer, a camera, an iPhone, a smart piece of equipment of some way of recording it. And not only recording it, sending it within seconds. So it doesn't matter what you confiscate, you can't control where they've sent it.
The other big thing about the 60s was people were a lot more regimental. So students were controlled by their teachers. The teachers were controlled by the government or by police forces. Everyone had probably a little bit more respect for the higher authorities. As we're now, we're more rebellious. And, you know, if someone told us, no, you didn't see that, we'd say, you know, get fucked. We did, basically. You know, no one's going to put in the modern child or the modern people, they're not going to put a seed that grows and denies what they actually saw.
Excellent, guys. That's exactly the answers I was hoping for. I don't know why I was hoping for answers. But so that's what would happen today, but 45 plus years ago, this event took place. And filmmaker Rosie Jones, along with researcher Shane Ryan, went and made a documentary about this. And as part of the interview, we talked to her about what her frustrations were like in trying to track these people down 45 years later. Were these people still scared? Were these people still uncomfortable? What was it like trying to uncover information from the newspaper and the media at the time? And we're going to listen to that interview when we get back after this break, and after that we'll talk about it.
Introducing GoShack, Australia's first exclusive paranormal equipment web store, providing Aussies with many of the sought-after materials to delve into paranormal exploration. GoShack currently offers items such as IR lights and full-spectrum digital cameras, mel meters, pods, full-spectrum illuminators, and much more. If we don't have what you're looking for, we will endeavour to provide it for you. GoShack prides itself on providing Aussies with high-quality products at prices unmatched across the globe. Check us out at goshack.com.au or find us on Facebook.
Rosie Jones, obviously there are a lot of people affected by this event. How did you guys go about finding a lot of these people? Were these people very happy, or were some of them reluctant to speak about it on camera?
You know, they were told as children that they must not talk about this, that they had to keep it quiet. And so, you know, so many of them, they hadn't even spoken to siblings about it. There were people who had been to the school, you know, in different years, and they hadn't even spoken to their brother or sister. So they were so, I guess it was the 60s, they were very obedient. They did what they were told, and they were told by the headmaster not to talk about it, and they were told that was reinforced by their parents. So, you know, I think it was a big relief for a lot of people to actually be able to bring it out in the open and not to be ridiculed, because that was the way they were treated. They were told they were children, they wouldn't have a clue what they'd seen, that, of course, flying saucers don't exist, and that they hadn't seen anything. So it's fairly crushing, I think, as a child, yeah, to be told those things. And even though you know, they felt they knew what they'd seen, they simply weren't believed. So there was a lot of relief. We did have to establish trust with people, because they were fearful of being laughed at. And there's still lots of people, you know, people that I would have loved to get to talk in the documentary who were afraid to talk. And also there were some people who, for example, the science teacher was threatened by the military and he didn't want to talk.
Yeah, there was a lot of people that received some pretty heavy reprimands for us. So it's the headmaster basically had the power to say, you can't talk about it's on school property or off school property, because, you know, there were students that were getting detention for appearing just in the newspaper, or, you know, the military would be there to stop interviews that the papers were trying to get with these students at the time. So there must have been some psychological fear still ingrained in them, even as adults.
Well, that's right. It's hard to imagine, I think, from our perspective now, because I think, you know, school kids are so much more, I don't know, I just don't think they're so obedient. I don't think they would listen to teachers in the same way. There'd be mobile phones, everyone would be ringing, it just would be a completely different scenario. And I think it's quite hard to look back and actually accept that they did what they were told, I think.
Do they have a really good memory of what they saw?
Well, everyone's different. But yes, they did. I mean, they described it as your classic UFO. Yeah, they did.
One of the more intriguing things I found was the disappearance of this Tanya that was taken away by an ambulance and then not seen by the students again.
That's right. Look, I have followed that up, and I have spoken to someone who I think may be Tanya, but she has a different memory of it. And so I'm... You know, her memory of it is fairly hazy. Now, it's difficult to know how to interpret that. You know, I think I have the right person, but I'm not 100% sure of that. Other people remember very clearly. There are more than one person remembers the ambulance and the person being taken away. So, you know, to date, I haven't been able to really get too much further with that. I'm still following it up.
Because she was the student that got, well, from what I understand, got the closest to the object. She was leading her and her friend through the Grange, and her friend turned back, and then Tanya returned to the school and kind of had a breakdown, from what I understand, and the documentary was taken away. So if the military were going to be interested in anyone from that, it would have been her, the one closest to the event itself.
Well, that's right. And her friend describes being taken into the headmaster's office and questioned by people that she thinks look like ASIOs. In fact, she was intimidated by them, and they ridiculed her. So, you know, clearly there was something going on here. I don't know what has happened with Tanya, and it's very difficult to find anything in the archives. I've tried to research via ambulance records, but they're closed for 60 years. Police records are closed for 60 years in Victoria, so it's really, you know, to find any hard evidence of these stories is sometimes very, very difficult.
And a lot of the records have gone missing anyway, so even in, what is it, about 14 years from now, when you will have access to these ambulance and police records, they could be gone. Because I remember when you guys were putting the movie together, there were articles in the newspaper. I think one of the headlines was, X-Files are missing, which was to say, you know, a lot of these records have just disappeared. No one knows what's going on.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's like the film footage, the news footage of the students. They definitely talk to the media outside the school gates, but that has gone missing from Channel 9. I mean, I don't really subscribe to conspiracy theories, and I'm sure there's lots of reasons for things to go missing, but it is very strange. There was no report of this in the local news, in the Age. There was no report in the Sun Herald. It seems to me that something a little odd has gone on here, because, you know, often those newspapers, that they'd report any UFO story because it was a hot topic. You know, so it's very odd that they were quiet on this. The only newspaper that really talked about it was, on the day, was the Dandenong Journal. In fact, actually, I'm wrong. There was a story in The Age the following day, and it suggested that it was a weather balloon. But, you know, I just think it's unusual. The quietness around this story is quite odd.
Have you heard of any other ideas on what this may have been?
Some people have talked about the it being connected with the U-2s that were being flown from Laverton at the time by the US. there's some possibility of it being another sort of weather balloon, a different kind of one that was being used by the US here at the time. You know, there's a number of ideas, but nothing that really seems that plausible to me. You know, I keep thinking there must be some kind of, there's a military connection with this, that there must have been something that they were experimenting with or some kind of craft that this could have been. But, you know, I don't know what it is. I really don't know what it is.
We know your research is continuing with Westall. Has there been anything, any breakthroughs or any new information that you can share with us?
Look, we keep finding out new small things, and Shane is continually adding to his witness list. I mean, he keeps talking to witnesses. We're trying to broaden the number of people who are connected to the website and connected to the story, but we haven't had a breakthrough yet. No, unfortunately. We're still working on it. I mean, what we really need is for somebody from the military to come out and tell us what was going on.
What is the military's response or the police response or any of the authority response? Because I take it you guys have approached them with the question of what was going on or can you give us any hand? What's their response to it?
That they don't know anything about it, and, you know, we just can't get into the archives. Because the Victorian archives are closed, you know, I've applied for, I'm actually about to do another Freedom of Information request for some police files. We just haven't been able to crack the archives. You know, I've recently tried to find a whole lot of files that may, they're diaries, police diaries, but they say that the records don't exist. They can't find them. So, you know, there's not much you can really do except keep digging.
Yes. And that it is fantastic that there's someone doing this work, because before this documentary came out, none really would have heard of it. Like I said, I haven't researched and investigated UFOs for 8 years, and all you would find is just a paragraph sitting in a book. And, you know, it was never the focus of any article. So it is fantastic that this has come to light. And, you know, it is the biggest event in Australian history for an unidentified flying object.
Well, that's right. And I mean, the number of witnesses that Shane's spoken to is amazing. And so as the database grows and the stories grow, you're always hoping that someone somewhere will have that one tiny little key to the whole story.
So there you go, guys. So that was a little brief, very brief section of the interview we did with Rosie. And Rosie talked a lot more about the case itself and a lot more about the interviews and, well, just a lot more about everything, a bit more about Shane. We'll talk about how you can get in contact with her or Shane if you've got any more information after. But for now, I want to hear what the team's response is to what she had to say about all this.
That was really, really sad. It was to hear the government and military have so much control, and I could just imagine the fear they put into their children.
Like, and this is a democratic country as well, so
it made me feel really sad.
That's exactly right. This is where this story gets even more interesting. I mean, once you get the authorities involved in this story, this is where it gets very, very interesting. The disappearance of Tanya, Rosie believes she might have found her, but why a child wouldn't return to a school after a sighting like this is amazing.
Yeah, it sounds to me, the way that she was talking, how she's delusional and doesn't really know herself and the events, it sounds like to me that she may have found her, but she's been brainwashed.
What happened is Tanya ran into the Grange. She approached the UFO. Once she got close, or even close enough to touch it, she dropped to the ground and passed out. So when she recovered, she came back to the school, and then she was taken away by an ambulance, which is probably the logical thing to do. But why you would never return, where she went from there, I mean, that's a huge question in itself.
I'd like someone to, well, Rosie is obviously, and I think she's going to be quite surprised when she does, if she manages to get any information released from the American and the military involvement. I think this is something that Saxon might really want to get his teeth into if he hasn't done before. Just the era of the time and the American involvement in Australia, I think there must be some connection somewhere.
Well, the report goes again that military men in khaki camouflage uniforms approached the scene. Australian military just wore the baggy greens. We didn't have the camouflage covering, so it wasn't Australian, unless they got it wrong. You don't know. Again, it's kids that we're dealing with. A lot of kids did see these military people came. They covered it up. They burnt the area where it was seen. They kicked in the crop circles left behind by the UFO.
Didn't Rosie mention also the science teacher that they found that did witness it? Was interrogated and threatened. told not to talk about it.
That's not going
to
happen these days, is it? Well, again, maybe when you get to a UFO scene, it probably would. But, I mean, threatening a teacher just lightly because of a weather balloon, it's not going to happen. What were some of the other things that we heard?
Well, the most interesting thing for me, besides the disappearance of Tanya, is many people stated that the military were there within 20 minutes and there is no way. And Rosie talks about this in the interview, and she had talked to other friends in the military who are responsible for that kind of, quick deployment of troops out to areas, whether it's just for exercise, whatever. They said there is no way that from the closest base of where the military were located at the time, that in 20 minutes they would have got 20 men together in trucks and got them to the site and got them all doing what they were doing. And that the biggest thing is that they seem to have had foreknowledge on the event.
Again, these things were bright, so I mean, they weren't very concealed. And I mean, if I was doing a military experiment, I wouldn't be messing around with stuff I didn't want people to see close to a suburban area.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, isn't it? Why there? I mean, look at Australia, we've got
Woomera.
Yeah, masses of expanses of desert. Yeah. Why over a populated area? Weird.
And again, this thing happened in 1966. If we had UFOs in 1966, we would have known about it by now, especially if they were under the military. I mean, we've got the stealth bomber. We all knew about that within 2 or 3 years of its creation. I mean, there's people out there watching airports, watching military airports, waiting for planes to take off, waiting for this to take off. If they had it, we would have a lot more sightings. We'd see where it landed. There's a mass of people who monitor this sort of stuff.
It's probably when the Americans first started getting into Woomera and doing the rocket testing and that sort of thing. Was it around then?
I think the Americans came here a lot earlier than the 60s.
They did Maralinga in 1955, yep. Didn't they? So, yeah.
Yeah, Rosie talks about that as well in the documentary. Rosie pretty much covers it all. We are starting to get a little bit over time, and the perfect way to wrap this up is with the listener's question, which, well, you'll hear it in a sec, and it's really going to wrap up the show nicely. So after these quick few messages from the sponsors, we'll get into that listener's question and wrap up the show.
Are ghosts real? Do the dead still roam? Could those stories really be true? Book a ghost tour with Haunted Horizons and find out for yourself. Or, why not journey into the much darker side of human nature and book onto one of our dark history crime tours through Gawler or Adelaide City Centre? Ring 0407 715 866. Or go to the Haunted Horizons website at adelaidehauntedhorizons.com.au.
Okay, we're back, guys, and it's everyone's favourite part of the show. Well, it's the crew's favourite part of the show. Well, is it? Listener's question?
Yes.
Tash is always just so serious. Yes. And this one comes from, what was it, Lily?
Yes, it was.
Paul's sister. How about that? And she asks, what do we think the Westall, what do we think it was? What is our personal conclusion? So not as a team, our own personal conclusion. What do we think it was from the information gathered? And I'm going to go around the circle. I'm going to go around anti-clockwise. And, well, I'll answer it at the end. So, Tash, what do you think? After having watched the video, after hearing the interview, and just mulling it around in your head a little bit, what do you think it was?
I think it was an actual alien aircraft, and I actually think that, the military knew about it.
Debbie?
Yeah, I'd kind of sit on the fence of both ways. I think there's a huge conspiracy, or it was some sort of testing that we still don't know about to this day.
And I have no idea. I'd like to see what was on that camera that was confiscated by the men. That the science teacher took. I like to see the pictures on the camera. I know it wasn't a weather balloon. I'm pretty sure, and I'm very doubtful that it was a military aircraft of some sort of the era of the 60s, unless it was maybe a confiscated piece of technology that they found somewhere. But as to say UFO, I've got no idea. I don't know what a UFO looks like. I've never seen one, so...
Why do you guys... So, Debbie, if you think it's not a military vehicle, and Tash, who doesn't think it's a military vehicle, why don't you think it is?
I just think the political environment of the day was pretty explosive, and I think Australia was stretching their wings and fighting for its own sense of national identity, and the Americans were coming into Australia, warfare, technology, science. I think it was a complicated era.
I have nothing to say.
I'll answer for Tash then. Well, it was 66. Since 66, I believe we've had probably about 38, 48 wars. If there was, I think, a military vehicle that could do all this stuff that these Westall kids saw, we would have used it in one of them to kick someone's ass. So,
okay, as for myself, I reckon it was hallucinations caused by the additives in fluoride to our water and the microchip implants that they were adding to the flu shots they were giving the students of the day. Obviously, I'm taking the piss right here.
I'm disappointed.
No. I've been reading too many conspiracy websites recently. No, I don't know. Surprise, got to sit on the fence on this one. I think we're going to find out in 13 years' time when these, when the files from the authorities are unlocked, and if they still exist, if they haven't been hidden, if they haven't been burnt and shredded and salted and stamped into the earth, that I think a lot of information is going to come to light. I think we're going to find out more about what was happening with Tanya, if this ambulance, if these medical records are still available, and I think we're going to find out, well, if the military records are accessible or not marked top secret, or, you know, some majestic 12 fucking documents or something. I think we're going to find out a lot about then.
Yeah, you'll get those two pages of everything's just being blacked out, set for two words, Westall.
Can I just ask? Who got rid of the craft, and is there a possibility it's in a bunker somewhere?
It flew away.
Yeah, it just left. So basically, it come in, it hovered or landed for, I think they said it was like 20 minutes. Yeah.
20 minutes.
And then it took off again, chased by five Cessna airplanes. This is all stuff we could have talked about, but we're going to leave it all for when you listen to Rosie's interview, and she goes in much more depth as to what's going on. So if you want to, obviously, in a couple of days' time, actually, Tash, say what you want to say before I get into this.
No, I'm getting ready to say goodbye.
Are you trying to jump in with happy hunting for Paul Kitaid again? No, so if you want more information about this, obviously you can wait in a couple of days' time, 3 or 4 days' time. The full interview with Rosie Jones will be up, and she talks a lot about the case. She does a better job than we bumbling through it. I think we do it in an entertaining way, though. You can also go onto Facebook and look up Shane Ryan's page, and if you look up Westall 66 on the internet, you're going to find the links to the official website quite early on the Google search results. And, of course, we'll chuck all the information in the podcast description. So, yeah, follow all those links if you have an interest in this case, find it, as well as buy the documentary. And you can get that on iTunes if you look up Westall 66, as well as you can buy it from the Australian Teaching something website. Once again, that it's a difficult URL to read out loud online, so we'll chuck that description anyway in the URL in the podcast description. So... thanks for listening to us. This was our first UFO show. I don't know what you guys think about it. Most of you are all into the ghost stuff. So, guys, how do you think we did with our first UFO show?
Good. I just feel a little bit depressed of listening to Rosie. Not that she's depressing, just the whole story with the kids and that. I just feel a bit, I don't know.
I'm not really into UFOs, but that documentary was pretty cool. To have an Australian case like this, I'm pretty proud.
I reckon they got something in a bunker somewhere.
Out in Woomera.
I reckon.
Area 51.
I don't care. It didn't.
Ayers Rock.
It didn't fly away. They've got it.
We might do another show just on Australian UFOs, where these things could be hidden, because there's lots of things we can talk about, the tall whites and the greys that have been seen around. But before we go and make you guys think we're all nuts, we're going to leave on that high note saying, you know, we don't know what it is. And I think it's going to be very exciting as to what develops. So once again, if you have got any more information, or if you're one of the children and were unable to be approachable for the documentary, please go check our podcast description and, yeah, follow the links that you find there. And of course, at the end of every show, we are seen out by some music.
We leave you this evening with Vintage Ink, Skyscrapers, found on Reverb Nation.
And before we cut in the music, we're just going to say goodbye. So, from myself, it's goodbye.
See ya.
Nanu, nanu.
See you on the streets, guys.
Okay, guys. See you next time.